whenever a child is baptized, there's a blessing at the end of the baptismal rite for the parents. And the blessing over the father goes like this. God is the giver of all life, human and divine. May he bless the father of this child. He and his wife will be the first teachers of their child in the ways of faith. May they be also the best of teachers, bearing witness to the faith by what they say and by what they do. It's a beautiful prayer that God himself is the giver of all life, human and divine, that the father along with his wife are the first teachers of their child in the ways of faith. The prayers that they may be also the best of teachers, bearing witness to their faith by their words and by their deeds. This, of course, follows what happens when the husband and wife are married. In the marriage rite itself, as the couple prepare to exchange their vows, they are asked a few questions by the priest or the deacon who is officiating at the marriage to question their intentions and to confirm their consent. One of those questions is, will you accept children lovingly from God and bring them up according to the laws of Christ and his church? And of course, the response is, we will. In the opening rite of baptism, when it comes to the parents, and we ask you, what do you ask for your children? You ask them to have them baptized. In doing so, you're instructed that you're accepting the responsibility of training them in the practice of the faith. It is the duty of the parents, mom and dad, to bring them up to keep God's commandments as Christ taught us by loving God and by loving our neighbor. Now, while everybody agrees to all these things I just mentioned, sometimes I kind of wonder, do you know, as parents, what exactly those Ten Commandments are? Have you learned and memorized and taught to your children the precepts of the church? What the corporal and the spiritual works of mercy are? Do you know all the prayers of the rosary? Can you pray the rosary by yourself without any kind of aids? Do you know the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testaments in the Bible? Do you know who Jesus really is? What he said, what he did, what he taught, and why? Those things are crucial for us as Catholics to know and to put into practice for our faith to be able to flourish and grow as the gospel speaks of. We notice very sadly that many Catholics are falling away from the church and falling away in great numbers. In reality, if just one leaves the church and walks away from the Eucharist, that is one too many. There are many who stop going to Mass, but they pray privately at home. Perhaps they've lost faith in the institutional church and her leaders, but they have not lost their faith in God. There are others who stop going to Mass and stop praying altogether, completely. Then there are others who leave and join other denominations, sects, or cults, wandering about lost in a fog of heresy, half-truths, or outright lies. Well, who's to blame when somebody leaves the church? When all is said and done, it's the individual person, the one who makes up his or her mind, freely willing to leave, who is making their own choice. But we have that choice, that we can make up our minds and freely will to remain faithful to Christ and his church, or not. But such a commitment to remain faithful to the Lord can only be made by one who fully understands the person of Jesus, who comes to know him and love him not as an abstract being, but as a personal God, as one who is love, who knows what he said and did and why. Those who come to know this person make that commitment to him, and they make that commitment to his body of believers, the church, regardless of the strengths or weaknesses of the members of the church. Because of their love for Christ, they follow the teaching of the teaching body, the magisterium of the church. They appreciate the ministerial priesthood, regardless of the humanity of the priest, and there's a great love of the sacraments. If you read the lives of the saints, you're going to find exactly this. Now, many saints were just like most of us. Many saints, like most Catholics, were simply part of the church because it was part of their milieu, right? Their parents were Catholics, thus they were baptized as Catholics. The society around them was Catholic, so they were Catholic. And like so many others, they just, without thinking, went on with the flow until one day, there was a deep conversion that awakened in them the graces of the sacraments they've been receiving and the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and then they were on fire. Why? Because there was an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ. We read from their lives that many saints were inspired by the examples of other saints. Most of them still living, or others who had passed on, but they had the historical example. But the fact is that they had an inspiration from somebody. It came within from with Christ, but there was an example, a living model. And that, my brothers and sisters, is exactly what the world and the church need today from us. That we would be people who be living models. People who are saints today in our present world and living the sanctity that the world needs so badly. We talk about priests being saints, and of course that's for the nature of it. If a priest who is not a saint is not worthy of the calling, I'll be honest. The same thing of a religious who is not striving for sanctity. We have an obligation for that. But what about parents, moms, dads, husbands, wives? We rarely or never hear about married couples being called by God to be saints, but they are. And married couples are called to be saints by virtue of living the sacrament of matrimony in their lives together as husbands and wives, in living the married life well, that is, in fidelity, faithfulness to God and faithfulness to each other, love for God and love for each other, mutual self-giving, mutual charity, establishing a bond of peace. In this, we see man and woman giving their lives to one another, and in that mutual self-giving, opening their homes to new life and then creating a family. And this is at the very heart of the church. No families, no church. That's the reality. Where do priests and religious come from? We come from families. The family is the church in microcosm. That is, it is the church in its smallest form. So when couples pray together, when they receive the sacraments together, when they learn their faith together, and then when they have children, include those children in prayer and learning and practicing the faith, you see a marvelous thing happening. Together, families learn and they discuss the commandments. Together, they learn and they practice the precepts of the church. Together, they learn and they practice the corporal and the spiritual works of mercy. They pray the rosary together. They read the stories of the Bible, the message of the gospel. They come to know and love Christ more and more each day as a family. And as the old saying goes, the family that prays together stays together. Indeed. One great example that we have is the family of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, the Martin family. You had Louis and Zélie, the mother and father, who are saints in their own right, and loving their children, raising them as they did, now have children. Some are canonized or blessed or on the way to that. But it's a marvelous thing to see, to become a family of saints, and that it is possible by the grace of God. But for this to happen, you've got to have a leader. And who is it that God has chosen to be the leader of this domestic church, the family, the church of the home? The Father. It's you, dads, the Father. Yeah, it means me too, as the father of the parish church. It also means the bishop of the diocese, and of course the pope is the church as a whole, but it begins in the family, with you, dads, to be the leader of faith for your families, assisted by your wives, but instigated, instituted, and carried through by you coming to Mass and bringing your family along with you. Now, I know it's not been the custom of this area to see that men are on fire with their faith, but that's where our problem lies, to be honest with you. And if it's been that you don't know how to lead your family in prayer, or kind of embarrassed or ashamed about that, don't worry. Begin learning now. I promise your wives will be happy to help you with that. But also you have other men, okay, other men who have been deeply involved in their faith, strong and faithful Catholics will be more than happy to show you and help you to be a man of God and be a man of faith. I mean, after all, that's what we're supposed to do anyway, is to help one another in living our vocations faithfully and well. The Old Testament book of Sirach says that God sets a father in honor over his children, and a mother's authority he confirms over her sons. In the Ten Commandments of Moses, we see that three of those commandments have to do with our relationship with God, the first three. The next seven have to do with our relationship with one another. Notice how after God, the first commandment in our human relationships is toward our parents. Number four, honor your mother and your father. And we see that Jesus himself did this, right? St. Luke tells us that after the incident where he was found in the temple, he went back home to Nazareth with Mary and Joseph, and he was obedient to them. Why? Because parents are called by God to be models of faith and virtue for their children. We call God Father, because all things come forth from him. Just as in human generation the seed comes from the Father, all things come from God. Thus, Adam is made first, as a male. Christ himself is a male, as the bridegroom who accepts his bride, the church. But Adam and Christ, and every male for that matter, reflects the fatherhood of God. In that, every man is created by God to be a leader, an example, a protector, and a provider. I'll say that again, no matter what society says. Every man designated by God to be a leader, an example, a protector, and a provider. So while a man might lead in a variety of ways and in different capacities, he must, in that leadership, give an example of selfless courage, an example of inner strength and a strong commitment to truth, of fairness and justice. He must protect his family and his community from anything and everything that compromises or even threatens their physical, moral, or spiritual well-being, even so far as to destroy anything that threatens their physical, moral, or spiritual well-being, just as a shepherd would fend off or sometimes even have to kill the wolves. A man is meant to provide for his family. He provides for their needs, of course, in food and clothing and shelter, but also he gives them affection and love and guidance, teaching his children and those under his care right from wrong and how to grow into faithful and responsible adults. It's no secret, when you watch certain television programs, men in general and fatherhood in particular are under attack. And it's under attack by these so-called progressive cultural elites these days. This gender identity confusion is a direct assault from hell on the human person. It is. It's something demonic. We are made in the image and likeness of God, of a God who is love and God who is a Trinity. And God has three distinct persons. But God knew exactly what he was doing in love when he created male and female in our biological, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual differences. He made men and women to be complementary to each other, to bring a completion to one another, to be one in love, not to become one in the same thing, but to be united in love, and in that love to bring forth new life. Each one, male and female, contributing to the marriage and to the family the unique gifts of masculinity and femininity. All this for the sake of the family's good, thus the church's good, and thus society's good. So on this Father's Day, fathers, love your children. Husbands, love your wives. And you young men who are not yet husbands or fathers, look to the example of those good men to see how to be a husband and a father, and in that order, by the way. God our Father is the sovereign master of his plan. And to carry it out, he has chosen us and makes us cooperators with him. He has given us a share in his own greatness and goodness, bestowing on us the dignity of a free will to be able out to carry out these principles for one another and the accomplishment of his plan. In this, may fathers be the first and the best teachers of their children in the ways of faith by what they say and by what they do, always keeping God's commandments of love and faithfulness, that their families may flourish in the presence of the Lord.